Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. I'm your host, Melissa. Welcome to the play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. You have children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to another episode of Raising Playful Tots. Glad you could stop by today. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. There's plenty of room at the dinner table here as we show and tell what we're grateful for. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Geralyn Bywater McLaughlin, founder and director of Empowered by Play, on the power of blocks for the under fives, because blocks are not just for babies. It was packed full of practical information for us to take action and take blocks to a whole new level. Thanks to Kristen for leaving feedback about the show length, and also thanks to Timothy, who was inspired to seek out new blocks. It is amazing when you look beyond the ABC blocks that we all know and seek out the variety and you know, see the huge range of blocks and block use. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week we have an interview with Dr. Diane Levin. She's a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts. And she's an author of several books, including So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood, and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. She's a hard-working activist who founded the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, the CCFC, and Truce. So what are good toys for our tots? This week has two really significant events in North America: Thanksgiving and Black Friday. Before you go holiday shopping, let these ideas sit with you a little. Going shopping on an empty stomach is never good. Toy and child-related shopping without a plan will be a problem, especially if the little guys are out with you. Tired, whining, begging children produced harassed and grumpy parents. So if you fail to plan, you know that you'll plan to fail. Dr. Diane Levin has resources and answers for helping us with our holiday shopping. So I hope you'll stick around. If you have feedback about the show, like Kristen and Timothy did, interview ideas, want to share your play activities, stories, or articles, then pop on over to the website to see links to contact me via Facebook, Twitter. Plus, you can see the show notes for each show. Links we've talked about in the show are also there in the show notes, so you don't have to grab a pen while you're driving or running or washing up or shopping or however else you listen. Listen out for the number of the show and add that to the URL to go straight to the current show. That's www.raisingplayfultots.com/75. I'll be right back after this short break.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark, and the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Whoa! Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Today I'm talking to Dr. Diane Levin, Professor of Education at Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts, internationally recognized expert helping parents and educators. Diane is a speaker, consultant, and author of several books, including So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood, and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. She's a hard-working activist who founded the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, the CCFC, and Truce, which she is here to talk about today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be able to talk about these issues with you.
So what is Truce, and why did you get it started?
Great. Truce is Teachers Resisting Unhealthy Children's Entertainment. And Truce was founded about 15 years ago when I had been doing work on how violence marketed to young boys and the toys that went with it, like He-Man and Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, how teachers kept asking me for help, understanding ways to work with parents to help them deal with these issues. They wanted materials. They wanted to explain what was going on. So I said to the teachers and directors of childcare programs in the Boston area, I'll work with you if you want to try to develop a little guide. So 12 people came to that first meeting. Before there was email, it was just word of mouth in the early childhood community. And we started preparing materials that we could distribute first in the Boston area and then gradually wider and wider, and then with email and websites, you know, more and more around the world. We developed materials. The very first thing we prepared was a one-page guide on the Power Ranger movie that was about to come out, to help parents think about how to deal with that movie. And we said, here's why teachers are worried about the movie. Here's, if you decide not to see it, here's how to talk to your child and work with your child about it. It's not just say no, but rather here are ways to kind of help your child learn from it, work from it. But if you decide to go, here are things you can talk to your child about before and after about the movie to help kind of deal with the violence and the messages they're getting, and not just give the movie full force in your child's life, but where you can play a role too. And that led to us deciding to continue to meet because the guide was so well received. And we prepared our first, the movie opened at the beginning of the summer, and starting in the autumn, what we did was prepare a guide on toys and play to help parents think about what toys they wanted to buy for the holiday season. And now, 15 years later, we're still preparing that toy guide, toy selection guide with good and bad toys and what makes them good and what makes them bad. And we are really committed to that mission. And every year, that's our activity in the fall, preparing it, getting it ready, and trying to really make a difference in the quality of children's play and the toys that they have to support it.
So how does Truce counteract the harmful impact of media and marketing on children?
Right. Well, we now have a media guide as well, the Truce Media and Young Children Action Guide. We have a baby guide, the Truce Infant Toddler Play Media and Toys Action Guide. And each of the guides tries to explain to parents and now teachers as well, here's what some of the issues are today. Here are the kinds of marketing that's going on. Here's what children need. Here's how you can help them. And here are some specific resources, toys that we think can really help with that, or the kinds of toys that can help. With the media guide, it's here's ways to set up limits, here's ways to work with your child around it, here's ways to talk to your child about what they see, here's ways to deal with media-linked toys, toys that are linked to your favorite shows and other products so that the show doesn't control their play, but rather the child controls what happens and can really work on what they do. One of the things that we found, and that I found in my work before Truce, but made me so committed to founding, you know, helping to found Truce, was that it was clear that children were mimicking what they saw on the screen. You know, I did a research study of the Ninja Turtle movie when it came out with American teachers, and how did they see the turtles affecting children in their classrooms? And over 90% said they thought that they were making the boys more aggressive, that they were using the karate chops, going around and using them to play, but also then to hurt other children when they were upset. And teachers really wanted to figure out a way besides just banning it.
Yes.
When kids, when they were upset, they would start karate chopping again. So that was one example of what we really tried to develop for them. And that was one reason why we developed the guides, to help them deal with things like the Power Rangers. And one of the things we decided from the start, our guides are not copyrighted.
Right.
We want people working with children to download them. If they're teachers, we want them to, and childminders, we want them to use bits and pieces in newsletters. We want them to, you know, put it up on their websites. We want them to do whatever they can do to use these materials to support parents' efforts. Because most of the issues we deal with, it's very hard to keep them totally out of kids' lives. You know, the activities that, the marketing. Well, to backtrack a little, what I found out, which led to Truce being founded, was that in the U.S., children's television had been deregulated in the middle 80s.
Yes, yes.
And in the UK, where you are, it was in the late 80s that this really started having a big effect. But here it was the mid 80s, and children, what was used to in these shows to create them, whole TV shows were created to sell products to children, and especially toys. And all the toys were media linked. They were realistic replicas of what kids saw on the screen. They said, when you play, you try to imitate what you saw on the screen, not be creative and imaginative and come up with your own play based on your own interests and needs. And we had kids all over the country. And then I found out when I was in England doing research, and then when someone else replicated it in Greece, the kids were going around and violence was used to market to boys. Yeah, we had Masters of the Universe. We had He-Man. We had, in the U.S., G.I. Joe, Transformers, you know, and then Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers. And that really created a childhood culture for boys that was much more tough, much more macho, and much more infused and consumed by violence. And for girls, it was being pretty and sweet. Yes. My work is focused on both those issues and how, having taught one of the first courses in the Boston area called Sexism in Education in the 70s, at the end, during the women's movement, it became clear that we were going backwards enormously. So what we want to do in the Truce Guides is really help parents deal with the extreme gender divisions, the violence, the sexualization, the remote controlness of it, the fact that so many of the toys and so much of the screen makes kids be more remote controlled instead of active agents themselves.
Yes, I really like the guide because it gives you talking points to actually start talking about these things, whether that's as an educator, as you mentioned, their point of view, where they can talk to their parents or each other about it, or just as parents yourself. It's hard when you have families around you that don't necessarily believe the same things that you do, that you don't know how to really talk about things without offending them, and they don't really know what to say to you without offending you. So it actually gives you a point to talk about, that you've got something in common that you can discuss.
That's exactly right. And many parents will say to me, when they have other family members like grandparents who often get the wrong, you know, the things that they wish their kids didn't have, put the toys, the Truce toy selection guide on the coffee table. So that they're, you know, it's a way to start a conversation.
Yes.
And it's a way to gain a little bit of weight in their request. So, sometimes grandparents say, well, you just, you know, that's what your little girl likes, a Disney princess doll. And I want to give her what she likes. And, you know, you're trying to make me into a bad grandparent.
Yes.
You know, and not buy her what she wants. I mean, this is a way to help. I mean, what we want to do is help families work together.
Yes.
Counteract the commercial culture, which is really underlying so much of this, children as objects to be marketed to and get them to buy, not what's best for them. In the case of many of the toys we deal with, we also always have recommended toys, you know, so that it's not just everything's bad, but we try to help parents see the positives as well.
Exactly. Actually, the guides come in black and white and in color. So if you're printing it off and sending it somewhere, then it's really good. You've got different options to do it there.
I'm glad you picked that up. That was a lot of problem solving to think about how to make it accessible to people so they could really copy it and use it. But the color guides, you know, are really, you know, people can carry them around and print them up and see them online. So we wanted both.
Super. Where would we find the toy guide this year? Because it's really important.
All of our guides, including the toy guide, just went up online. It's TRUCE, truceteachers.org. And all of us doing this work are experienced early childhood educators who devote our time to working together. And for many of us, it's one of the most satisfying things we do. And we think it has a lot more impact than many of our other jobs. But again, it's truceteachers.org.
After listening to all of those things that you were talking about, I'm sure lots of people are more excited now about having a plan for going forward with their, choosing their toys and being with their kids. And they're excited. Maybe they want to spread the word with their friends or their local nursery school or their mum's group that they've got. We can print it off and we can give it to them, but are there other ways that parents or educators or just people in general can help spread the message about truth?
For one thing is, with everyone on email, people can link the guide and send it out to family members and send it out to other parents, of parents of children's friends. As I said, the guide is uncopyrighted, so teachers and child care directors can take bits and pieces of the guide and put it in newsletters. We try to do, talk to programs like yours and do other media, which we're beginning now, because the big toy buying season begins in the U.S. with our Thanksgiving. So we're trying to get word out through the media. So I want to thank you for doing this interview now and getting the word out as well.
Oh, you're welcome. Today I'm talking to Dr. Diane Levin, who helps parents and professionals understand and counteract the harmful effects of violence, war, media, and commercial culture on children. She gives over 30 keynote addresses, trainings, and workshops for parents and teachers a year throughout the United States and overseas. I smiled yesterday to see the CCFC's newsletter in my inbox talking about the Toady Awards.
Yes.
I had Josh Golan on show number 27, and he was talking about ways to reduce commercialism in our children's lives. It was also the time of the Einstein refund. Do you remember that?
Baby
in 2009?
How could it? I absolutely remember it. It was a highlight of the efforts that we've made to deal with commercial culture.
Oh, my goodness, it was amazing.
Great, yeah, it was totally amazing.
And you mentioned also the Toady in your toy buying guide, so tell us a little bit about what that is.
Well, Truce works very closely with Campaign for a Commercial Free Childhood, which I helped found 11 years ago. And in that group, there is Josh Golan, who you mentioned, and Susan Lynn, who was a co-founder, who really run it. I call myself the aunt. She's the mother, and she really has set its course. I've been involved with it all along. Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood started the Toady Awards as a kind of a trying to find the worst toys out there and have people vote on their worst toy of the year. And this year we finally figured out a way to kind of try to coordinate our efforts with Truce and our bad toy list and our toys to avoid list and them. So we did choose several of the toys they nominated were for older children than our age range, but we tried to coordinate the ones that were for younger children. So for instance, we have the IMT Pain microphone. T-Pain is a rapper.
And, yes.
They say it's for 7 and up, but then, they're kind of pictures of younger kids using it. The idea is for children to imitate this rapper with the microphone. He has a lot of lyrics that many parents wouldn't want their 5-year-olds involved with, even 7 or 9-year-olds. But yeah. Then you can hook it up to the internet and you can download the songs you've made and you can upload T-Pain songs and other rap songs. So you can really start doing rap culture when you're 5 to 7. And we felt that wasn't really the appropriate way for kids. I mean, to be a superstar using someone else's lyrics graphic lyrics did not seem to us like something we'd want to support. So we agreed with the Toady Award that we would have that as one of our bad toys. Under a category, what the Toys to Avoid and Recommended Toys does is we have categories of toys that we think are a big problem. This year, we have the IMT Pain microphone under the category Media Mania, toys and games linked to the media. that make media the focus of children's lives, because it encourages them to watch screens more, to be involved with technology more, instead of using their own ideas and imagination. So that's where that goes. Another toy that we had on the list from the Toady Awards was Monster High dolls for children ages 6 and up. And those dolls have very thin bodies, very provocative clothing. You'd have to have an eating disorder to have the body, but they've upped the ante from what Barbie dolls and Bratz dolls look like to be even more extreme. And one of the things marketers have learned is that as adults and children get used to one level of something, they need to make it more extreme to capture their attention.
Yes.
Monster High dolls are a perfect example, and that goes under the category So Sexy, So Soon. Toys that make sexiness and appearance the focus of the play instead of play itself. So that's another one. And then the third one, there's a big push right now to get iPad-type technology in the hands of babies. And the newest one that's come out is called Vinci. It came out this month, and it's a plastic coated iPad type toy that children, so that they say it's for birthing up children.
Oh, my goodness.
They show babies playing with it, and they can do all kinds of things from it sings them songs, it reads them books, it makes birds hatch from eggs, and babies just push the screen and all kinds of amazing things happen. And we're really concerned that it's bringing remote control, secondhand experience babies into the world who don't develop attachment, don't develop the sense of how objects in the world work and how they control them, which are both, you know, the real tasks of babyhood in terms of growing and developing. So that's another one of our toy distress, our distress toy list.
So what happens with the Toady Award? What do people need to do?
People can go online to the Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood website, and the website is commercialfreechildhood.org, and there will be a link to be able to see the nominations and vote for them. And then they can get on the, they can sign up for the email list, which I highly recommend they do, because they'll get a notice about who won the Toady. But they'll also hear about other terrible products that they should really be concerned about. And the CCFC website is just a wealth of information about their fact sheets, about marketing to children, about baby products, about about violence issues that really do provide information for parents and others, you know, teachers, professionals, to have facts and figures that will help them in their work. It summarizes research. It's really become a site all of, you know, kind of worthy of everybody's attention. And so if you sign up on the email list, you'll hear about various actions we launched, like when the Baby Einstein Action was launched maybe 3 years ago with our Federal Trade Commission, which is part of the federal government and responsible for overseeing marketing to children. With deregulation that I was talking about in the 80s, they lost their power to regulate, but they can recommend. So the CCFC filed a complaint that there was no research, or almost no research, to support the claim of Baby Einstein toys that it will make your baby smart. And there's a growing body of research to say it's going to make them dumber and cause behavior problems and various other things. And that was the decision you mentioned, that it was agreed that they would change a little bit of their advertising. The Federal Trade Commission couldn't regulate and make them change it, which is pretty amazing. And we've been trying to work to get regulation back, but in these times, it's very difficult.
Yes, it is. Not at this time at all, because there's so much, I guess there's so many things that are tied up with that that is beyond our control, really. With the childhood, the Campaign for a Commercial Childhood, that the CCFC, their website is brilliant for sending out the emails, because, you know, we're all so busy doing so many different things, we don't realize that there are so many things that are going on. And when you see that somebody is acting on your behalf, highlighting the things that, you know, I wouldn't be happy seeing my child playing with those toys or doing that thing. We can't be there to see everything, and it's really good when you bring it to us, and then we can vote, or we can, you know, tweet it, tell other people, and we can actually raise quite a stink about something. That's
yeah,
brilliant, how it gets us all.
It's now really an interesting, you know, there are people signed up all over the world, and it does mean that the issues that are brought up do get spread far and wide. And at two levels, one, it helps people have more information to resist the forces. But two, it gives them information to work to make them less bad, to make them better than they otherwise would be, and to really do activism and lobby and tweet and do all the things they can to really get the word out and help people resist what's happening, for sure.
I think the biggest thing that I've realized is living in I've lived in quite a few different countries, being a military family, is that you realize that what happens in one country will eventually happen in another country. And you have to be able to see what you're doing where you are and be able to relate to what's happening in other parts of the world, because, you know, people tend to go towards the lowest common denominator. And being able to talk to the friends and the people that you know in the places that you're at and say, look at what's happening in this place, you know, that could be happening right here with us, or that already happened with us, or, you know, being able to have that conversation is really important.
Absolutely. You said it better than I could. exactly right, and why we have the CCFC has accomplished what it has because of the grassroots, its grassroots nature and the wide base that we have. You know, that people, you know, occasionally we ask people to send emails and letters. We do that less than we used to, but at the beginning, you know, we'd be upset about a product, write a company about it. And our first success was when, you know, 10,000 people in 24 hours wrote to that company to say, you shouldn't release this product. And they didn't. We were,
brilliant.
You know, that is the way we can have a voice now, when government isn't really always doing the job it should.
Yes.
Protect children from the forces that be.
Exactly. Diane, you've written lots of books that we should add to our own parenting book list
right.
This season. All of them will touch all of our households, because they're things like The War Play Dilemma, What Every Parent and Teacher Needs to Know, So Sexy So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood, and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. And one book in preparation, you say, is Beyond Remote Control Childhood, Working Effectively with Young Children in the Media Age. How did you come to be so passionate about these 21st century topics?
That is a good question. And I think in part it had to do with when I came into the field and where I did my training. I worked with a professor in my undergraduate years who, his name was Jerry Brown from Brenner, and he developed what was called the ecological model, which said you need to look at how the various forces in society are affecting children. You don't just look at children as you're studying child development, which I was studying. And I realized how my work ever since has very much looked at how societal forces affect children, so I learned his lesson well. But my last year at university, I spent a semester in Detroit, Michigan, a summer in Detroit, Michigan, studying urban issues and poverty issues, just when the war on poverty had started in the U.S. and how we did
right.
it for children, and that was something that I was very involved with. And we had just started the war on poverty in the U.S., and I was studying how it was being used in Detroit, and I was there for the Detroit riots, which was right in the inner city, and it was a very kind of profoundly, it was traumatic, but also transformational, and seeing children afterwards at the center where I work who had been part of the, who had lived right there as I had, and seeing how traumatized they were, how different they were the week before and the week after. It just made me so much focus on how what happens in the world is affecting them. And so I got interested then in gender issues and stereotypes when the women's movement started, and how developmentally how that affected young children and played out as they got older. My college, Wheelock, where I teach, where I was teaching then as well, was doing a conference on how the nuclear threat affected children, because research was coming out saying that that psychology was changed when you knew the world could be destroyed at any time in terms of your investment in the world, and that it contributed to the me generation. So again, I always look at, well, what does that mean for young children? And they asked me to do a session, and I started looking at how war and violence affected young children, and got interested in that issue. And when I went around talking about that work, teachers started saying to me, but what about war play? How does that fit into the picture? And I've
yes.
trained as a play therapist, So I said, well, kids bring to their play what they need to work on. And teacher said, something's different. I've taught for 10 years, and I have kids who are obsessed now with boys, who are obsessed with war play. I used to ban it or let them play outside. It wasn't a big deal. But now we have guerrilla wars in our classroom. And that's when I found out television had been deregulated a year before. It wasn't in the news for the first time. Until then, there was a limit on the number of advertising minutes there could be per hour in the U.S., and the Federal Communications Commission ruled that marketing a line of products with a TV show created a program-length commercial, so you couldn't do it. And with deregulation, within 1 year, 9 of the 10 best-selling toys had a TV show. And He-Man Masters of the Universe was the big one. Boys were obsessed with it. So that's when I started studying how media and toys marketed with the media were bringing violence into boys' lives and affecting their play. And what we found was they weren't playing, they were imitating.
Yes.
Which is running around imitating what they had seen. They weren't doing the kind of play that as early childhood educators we were trying to foster. So it's how do you, the war play dilemma is that children bring to their play what they need to work on. That's the child development view. But the sociology view, political view, is that children learn lessons when they play. And if violence is being glorified, they're imitating it, it's exciting, it's fun, then they're learning harmful lessons. So that's the dilemma. Both sides are right. And what do you do to deal with it? And so I've always then was concerned about how gender divisions were used to market to children. And that's when work on girls started and led to So Sexy So Soon recently. But the activism, the idea that I understand these things, I can help parents and teachers create a better environment and counteract the forces, has been at the heart of all my work since, because I feel like it's been a great privilege to learn all these things, but I need to use them in ways that help others make a better world for children.
Well, that's brilliant, because, you know, a lot of people have this great knowledge of how to do all these things and haven't got a really good way of disseminating it for all of us to understand how that is.
And that's been a struggle to figure out, you know, the best ways to get it out. But getting it out has never been, you know, trying to get it out has never been a question.
Yes, because we see all these studies on the news that pop up, you know, in the news cycles, and they glorify this and highlight this bit, and they just give, you know, sound bites.
Right.
And poor parents feel bombarded, you know, they often feel, you know, this week we do it this way, and then next week you're telling me to do something else. So people ignore these things and don't know really what to do. So
identified one of the forces I'm thinking about most right now, the soundbite society.
Yeah.
And how, in effect, it makes adults thinking more like children's thinking that I understand. You know, the soundbite, the slide. Here's this idea. Here's that idea. Here's that idea. You have to figure out how they work, how they connect to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have time. You go on to the next idea. So, it's like a soundbite society. It really undermines one's sense of connecting, being able to really influence the world, know what one's doing. I guess that is something that I really try hard to help people with, you know, to make those connections. And, you know, you picked up on it very well. So often, teachers, academics kind of know their research, but don't think about the implications. Too often, practitioners don't know enough about the theory and the research.
Yes.
I guess I discovered early on in my work that was my passion, connecting, you know, the theory and research with practice and practical things that affect what we do. And I think that's the underlying theme in all of my work.
Oh, you're right. And I like the way that we can get together and really chew over the material that you give us. It's really not sound bites that you give. We have a chance to talk it through like we're doing on a show like today, and really be able to flesh these ideas out in our own minds, so that when we go back to our families, we have these discussions, and it's not a clear straight line, we're only going to do this as a family, but we might have to revisit over time the things that we're doing and look into why we're doing what we're doing and whether some of these products are what we want to do for our family.
Perfect summary. And just a couple of other things in terms of the media, you know, parents setting up rituals, rules, and routines for the media in their kids' lives can really help them. And the media guide talks about that. So kids aren't always nagging and a little more here and a little more there. So it becomes suddenly a much bigger force in kids' lives than parents ever realized it would be. Finding ways to talk about what kids are interested in, not just say, no, it's bad, but what do you like about it? And, well, here's what I don't like about it. And let's watch it together so we can talk about what you like and what I like and what you don't like and I don't like. And that kind of connecting, being with kids through this culture, I think is this, I mean, more important than any of the Truce Guides, although I hope Truce Guides helps parents with this, that we really need to be more involved and think about how to help kids grow up in this society where they're learning the lessons we hope they'll learn, but connecting them to all the messages and information they're getting out there that's different.
I like what you said just now, because putting on my parent hat here, I feel like I need to lie down in a dark room after going in the toy aisles, certainly at this time of year, because it's just bright and lots of sounds, and it's huge with all of these stacks of toys that they want you to sell, for you to buy. And it's easy to see for parents that they don't want all of this stuff, that they can just go to the other end and say, okay, I'm going to ban that music, I'm going to ban that book or that magazine or that show. But it seems like you're suggesting that banning it wholesale is not the right way
and
to do it.
Actually, so soon there's a part of a chapter that's 12 reasons why just saying no won't solve the problem. And that we need to get beyond just saying no. Absolutely. Yes. That doesn't mean we never say no, but it's how we say it. And, you know, how do we get to that point with our kids? And how do we stay connected so they don't just see us as the enemy who's always saying no?
Right.
The person who, if they nag hard enough, they'll get it. You know, marketers do research on how to get kids to nag their parents.
Oh, my goodness.
Some parents don't know that. So, you know, there really are. I mean, so, yeah, we can do a lot to help kids. And I mean, just another example in the Truce Toy Action Guide, not that that accompanies our toy selection guide. There's a longer guide, an 8-page guide that's online called the Toy Action Guide, the Toy and Play Action Guide. And that provides one of the suggestions it has for play. And we urge, you know, grandparents to make, or parents too, to make this as one of the special gifts for their children during the holidays, shoebox gifts.
Yes.
And shoebox gifts are kind of helping, you know, getting common, inexpensive objects and putting them together in a box. That so you might have, I'm just looking one up right now, you might have the bathtub play shoebox gift, where you get a sponge and a terry face cloth and a small baby doll and a small action figure and cups, you know, measuring cups and spoons and plastic bottles that are squirt bottles. And you make a nice little sign for it and, put it in a nice little plastic shoebox. And that can be by the bathtub. And that can create hours of wonderful play in the bathtub that's very different from watching a screen or using the toys that are linked to screens or that are push button or that are highly structured. And we have examples of several of them, of different kinds of shoebox gifts that one could make around themes based on children's interests and what you have around them.
Could you just say where you could find those examples?
Again, if you go to the truceteachers.org website, one of the guides is called Toys, Play, and Young Children Action Guide, the Truce Toys, Play, and Young Children Action Guide. And on page, it's an 8-page guide that really talks more about play and toys, the role of toys in play. And one section is shoebox gift theme ideas. Use these or create your own. So the new guide that we were talking about just now is just out for the holidays, which is the Toys Selection Guide, which this guide, the play guide I'm talking about, can accompany.
Yes.
But the toy selection guide was just done, and that has different kinds of categories of toys with examples to avoid and toys that are recommended,
right,
with simple explanations of why, to help parents begin to develop a framework for thinking about the toys their children are playing with.
Okay, let's just end with looking at products. You know, we've got all this information. We understand that we have a part to play in our children's lives with which toys that they have. We can decide which shops that we go and shop in and which toys to choose. I noticed in your guide you mentioned some types of stores like Melissa and Doug that would encourage parents to be able to look for those type of catalogs or look those types of toys up online, because it can be difficult, apart from the big box stores that you're used right. To realize that there are these other places, you know, for the parents and the people that are buying presents this week, next week, getting ready for the Christmas season, the holiday season, and they're going out now and thinking about the toys. We have the toy guide, but as how do we protect our boys and girls from the media and the marketing intrusions that we see? Because we're not doing a really good job of it. It's not getting any easier out there. Have you got any practical suggestions?
There's no way to do a really good job.
Right.
Because it's everywhere, and if you don't do it, then they'll go to friends. If you say no, then they'll be at a friend's house and see it. But, the kinds of toys that we recommend, and you asked about kind of specific examples, you know, the toys of value. One category is toys that encourage let's pretend, that encourage dramatic play. And we tried this year to choose toys that are readily available. You know, not real. Often the better toys are much more expensive, and we tried this year to choose some that weren't that expensive and might be more readily available. But one example might be a little veterinarian kit. The vet case veterinarian kit includes different supplies for children to pretend to be a veterinarian and take animals.
Yes.
So if a child then has stuffed animals, they have all kinds of ways they can start playing, and we can help them get involved with that. Another category of play to support is, let's use our little fingers, toys that promote manipulative play, such as, and we use the shape sorting cube that is a Melissa and Doug toy. It's a wooden cube with different colored shapes to fit inside, or the wooden ramp racer. Which allows children by young explorers, and it's a wooden toy that has four cars that helps children do racing, and they can start developing all kinds of things, you know, with those four little cars. So that's the kind of other examples for young, you know, for good toys. Let's take turns, toys that promote game playing. Let's move, toys that promote physical play. So we've tried to have categories and talk about why it's important, and then have examples for bad toys. We have things like Bang Bang, You're Dead, toys that make violence the focus of the play. And one example we have there, Transformer toys, they now have a different toys for starting with 12-month-olds recommendation. And your listeners should know that age recommendation is not regulated. They can put anything they want on the box that they think they can get away with. That there is another rule in the U.S., which is it'll say not suitable for children under age 2 because of small parts, and that is an agreement in the industry, and that's often on the back of the box. But the age recommendation on the front is whatever they want it to be. So Transformers is a PG-13 movie, but they're these little wooden figures that, you know, the Transformer ATV ride-on Optimus Prime, it's a four-wheel ride-on push car that makes loud electronic noises for children ages 12 months and up. So it gets kids interested in the movie, even if they don't know it fully yet. It kind of, then they want the next toy, which is for two-year-olds, which begins to be more violent. And you can see the steady progression of luring kids in, the younger the better, because research shows the younger you get kids' brand loyalty, the longer you're going to keep it. Then we have So Sexy, So Soon. And one example is Disney Princess, My First Soft Bedtime Princess Dolls, and Travel Me Princess Dolls. So again, brand loyalty, the younger the better. It's little baby dolls, but they have tiaras and pink clothes, and they're princesses to get children interested in Disney and Disney princess information to get them involved. So those, the one that I think is the newest, that may be the most, has been the least talked about, is Bells and Whistles, children's books linked to push buttons and electronics. There are more and more books that entertain. You push buttons and they read to you. They make sound effects. And is it a toy or is it a book? And yes. What worries us about it is it gets kids to focus on the actions, not the part that's the important foundation for pre-reading, pre-literacy, which is to pay attention to the print, to pay attention to the words, to pay attention to the meanings, the pictures, learn how to get information from symbols. So we're really worried about this huge escalation in the last couple of years of media-linked high-tech books.
Well, thank you so much for all the information that you've given us today. It's certainly given food for thought and lots of information to go alongside it. Where can we find in one place all the things about your work?
I have a website, which is DianeLevin.com, which is has links to articles, has links to the websites for Truce and CCFC. And if people are more interested in the sexualization stuff, because that's my most recent book, it does have a website, and it's SoSexySoSoon.com.
Perfect. Today I've been talking to Dr. Diane Levin, Professor of Education at Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts. She's been training early childhood professionals for over 25 years. She teaches courses on play, violence, prevention, action, research, and a summer institute on media literacy. Thanks for sharing your work on the show today.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you in this kind of depth about these issues.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Lisa of TalkingTots.info, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. I know lots of you are already hunting for your holiday gifts and thinking hard about gifts for the children in our lives. There was a lot of information in this week's interview, and if you want to go into more depth and learn more, I would really recommend grabbing Diane's books. We recorded this show in preparation for this Thanksgiving week and Black Friday because it's such a big deal. Black Friday is the biggest and probably busiest shopping day in North America. Heavy and deep discounts get many people out on Friday after spending the Thursday with their family for the traditional Thanksgiving meal. Traditionally, Americans have a full 4 days off work. You know, not everybody gets that. Thanksgiving is a massive, massive food blowout plus family get-together. Families travel for miles and they fly and they drive to be together. And then the next day they often go together to the malls. This year, however, there's been a lot of talk about doorbusters. You know, the first five people to get a plasma TV for $10 instead of $5,000. These used to be early Friday morning doorbusters where you'd get up really early, 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning and queue up. And so that gave families a full day, the Thursday, to have Thanksgiving, a full day of food, friendship, and a chance to reflect on gratitude, the pillars, the typical things that you think about when you think about Thanksgiving. This year, however, stores are heavily competing for our money, and that means that some stores have opened or going to be opening up on Thursday. So that means some people won't actually be going to sleep at all on Thanksgiving because they'll be queuing up straight after their meal, you know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night to queue up for doorbuster sales that will start at midnight and some at 11, some at 2 in the morning. So it's really cutting into that whole day of Thanksgiving itself. There is a temptation to buy things because it's a huge bargain. I mean, how can you resist? But not if there's not intrinsic play value. What I love about the Thanksgiving holiday is how we choose to celebrate it. That's each of us, each family. How commercial do you want it to be? It's totally up to us to decide what we want to do and how we need to do it. Maybe we need to be out there getting that doorbuster sale or getting those bargains because that's what our family needs to do at the time. But we also can choose, if that's okay for our family, to not to celebrate in that way, to choose to be together and spend Thanksgiving in a more traditional way. Celebrating Thanksgiving outside of America is always interesting. It gives a really different perspective because, you know, the rest of the world just carries on whenever a particular country has its holiday. And so we're in the UK and we will be celebrating Thanksgiving away from our family, our American family. And life just goes on. So on Thursday, as a bicultural family, we will celebrate Thanksgiving here together. And I'm thinking of doing some gratitude chain links with the children throughout the day and some play activities associated with gratitude. I haven't really decided what to do, so if you've got any ideas, that would be really good. One thing I'm trying really hard to have with the family is perspective. We're grateful for so many things. We're blessed with so many things, and yet we need to resist the urge to go and get and go and buy and need more and more and more. And so I really want to reflect on how Thanksgiving traditionally has been about gratitude. It's a good time to stop and reflect on what we have and how we can help others, when at this time of year, a lot of what we see around us is about spending and buying for ourselves. But that's me. What about you? Whether Thanksgiving is your holiday or whether Black Friday or its equivalent in your country is something that you like to do, how do you show gratitude with your kids? How do you teach it? How do you share that you're thankful for things? I'll link to one idea we do in the show notes, but I'd love to hear from you. How do you celebrate Thanksgiving? How do you show gratitude? You can link up on Facebook or tweet me on Twitter or come to the show notes and let me know there. That will be the podcast question of the week. Oh, and by the way, there's a correction in the interview about the microphone product mentioned from the Toady Awards, and I'll leave a link to that in the show notes too. Thanks for listening this far, and if you've got this far, let me know by dropping by and letting me know, saying something like, I listened. Keep safe this week, and thank you for downloading and recommending the show. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 75. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.